King KB0, KBJ, monitor.
What's freezing yet?
Say again.
Steve, are you freezing yet? KB0, KBJ, KJ4, WZM.
Hey, Daniel. Myself or the weather? I think you're keying up too fast. All I got was your chuckle.
Oh. Okay. I said both, actually. Both you and the weather. Which one's freezing? Both or just you or just the weather?
Well, my socks are a little cold on the toes because I went walking around in my Crocs outside and stepped in snow and got snow in them. But I got a heated sweatshirt on. It's on medium power, so I'm staying warm.
Yeah, I didn't even know they had heated sweatshirts. I had no idea about that. That's neat. Never heard of them. I don't even own a pair of Crocs. I can't imagine owning a pair of Crocs and actually wearing them and living in South Dakota. Interesting. I could see that if you lived in, like, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. That makes sense. South Dakota. Oh, it's snowing outside. Oh, let's go put on some Crocs and walk around in the snow and then complain that our feet and toes are cold. That sounds like a great idea, Steve.
What do you think? We wear nothing but swampers up here all the time? Too much hassle to put on. I just slipped my feet in the Crocs, but they always have holes in them, you know. Yeah, we got a bit of snow here yesterday. Last evening and last night, I don't know, a couple inches, but it blew like 50 mile an hour winds, so. It was a blizzard warning. Well, as I went to work this morning, the roads were ice covered. So I cruised down the road at 45, even down the interstate, made it to work okay. Roads are clear coming back home. And I was looking at the weather last night about this time, it said, tonight, low temperature of, well, yesterday, see, the high had been in the 30s all day. So last night, I was looking at the weather, National Forecast Office weather, and they said, tonight, low temperature of 27. Tomorrow, a high of 24. And I thought, that's a little odd.
Well, that doesn't sound super enjoyable. That usually doesn't show up here until January, thankfully. Ugh, yuck. High of 24 tomorrow. How exciting. So I guess the temperature's going down some more, down. Sounds like perfect weather for more croc wearing. Except they have holes in them. Are you going to bump that sweatshirt setting up to high tomorrow?
No, it was 24 today. That's what it dropped to. From last night, it's 27 to 24 today, I guess. I didn't really pay attention to the weather, but it was below freezing all day. No, I haven't worn this sweatshirt much. We got low, medium. I guess that was on low. Low, medium, and high. Yeah, it's a one I got from work. So, anyhow. The first snow of the year. And it was a blizzard. And I guess a little bit of snow tomorrow, possibly. 30% chance, 70% chance it won't, in my opinion. But it ain't going to amount to nothing. Ground was pretty warm, you know. It's always that way at first. No, ground's warm. So, it didn't really amount to nothing. But it'll melt. Be back up in the 50s by Tuesday, they're saying. So, it'll all be gone. So, that's kind of the latest news up this way. Over.
Forecast. I'm looking at that snow there tomorrow. Few flakes. It looks like they're not even expecting an inch. It's probably going to be that really dry, powdery stuff. The system that came across to you is a low pressure system that was riding inside a a trough coming out of the Arctic. So it was undercut by a lot of cold air. And that cold air is actually on its way down here. We're going to see the upper 20s at my house, I think, Sunday morning. So it'll get a little cool here, but not like you've got right now. Looking at your forecast, you'll get your high at 54 on Tuesday, so it'll be nice and warm. You wake up Wednesday morning, it ain't but 23 outside with a bitter cold wind blowing. It's going to be cold all over again Wednesday, Thursday, all over again. Round two, but this time no snow, just wind. So have fun with that.
Yeah, it's that time of year. Well, all the snow will melt probably, and so it'll be brown ground again. Brown ground's better than white ground if you want to suck up heat, you know. Kind of tough for the sunshine to warm the ground up if it's white, covered in white anyhow. Might be another mild winter like last one. Last year we had 6-8 inches of snow on the ground. And I think that was the 20th of October. So we made it quite a while without seeing frosty, snowy stuff. I don't think I've had to, but 2-3 mornings had to, you know, deal with frost on the windshield. It's been pretty mild, really. So I guess that's the way it goes. Last year we had a brown ground at Christmas even. Yeah, quite often this time of year, especially right around this 10th through the 12th of November, you get a massive low system like we just got going on here that sucks up moisture and from the Gulf, wraps around, and first it rains, that's what it did yesterday. Then the winds pick up and they come screaming out of the north and it brings the cold with it and all the moisture makes a big circle and comes, hits us on the top of the head as snow then. But yeah, this happens quite often right at about this date. It's very common for some odd reason. It seems to somehow just work out to right at November 10th or 12th. See, November 10th was the, when was it, 75, 46 years ago, on November 10th, the Edmund Fitzgerald went down in a same kind of storm system, went down in Lake Superior, 29 sailors lost their lives.
Familiar with that story inside and out. Very, very, very interesting story. And a guy named Gordon Lightfoot wrote a song about it. He was from that area and wrote a song about that because of you know, it being a major local story around there. It's a famous incident. Kind of folk type music is what it is, really. So he wrote a song about that. And I had actually heard the story long before I heard the song. And so when I heard the song, I was like, oh, wow, I know that story. This is pretty interesting. Same type system, though, exactly, where it comes through and you figure, oh, it's all gone, and then the wind picks up and the frozen precipitation comes in. Exactly, yep. And that was confusing to them back then because the storm comes through and you think, oh, that's it. And then all of a sudden the weather changes in behind it. Yep. Same thing. Exactly the same thing. Pretty interesting, though, about the pattern. And I noticed a pattern around here, too. 3 years out of the past four. And I have pictures of dates on this, too. 3 years out of the past four, it has snowed between December 8 and 11. I don't know why, just that it has. About 4 inches at a time, each time, up here. Right on the edge of the mountains, and it's just from the edge of the mountains all the way through the mountains, it doesn't really do much anywhere else. Just hits our area and takes off. So it barely gets us. We get the edge of it. South of 85 doesn't get anything at all. Maybe some cold rain, if that. And then it goes on its merry way and slams the northeast at about a foot, foot and a half, depending on where you are up there. And it takes off, and that's about it. So that tends to show up here between December 8th and 10th, maybe 11th. I'm waiting to see if it does the same thing this year or not. It did not do it last year, but it did it 3 years in a row on the same date, which is really weird to me.
Call this the Gales of November, as Gordon Lightfoot calls it. Yeah, I know that song is played all, man, all over Visitor Center up in Wisconsin. They show a video, you know, and it's played all around the edges of Lake Superior. They have a special event station commemorating it quite often, a couple of them, at lighthouses along the lake. Yeah, Gordon Lightfoot did an awesome job, and a good song, good folk song, I think a lot of people would have forgot about it or not have learned about it had it not been for that song. But that really tells a good story. But I was living up in that area. I remember going to Michigan Tech, MTU, Michigan Technological University, as a kid, and they have a snow carving competition every January. They build some pretty cool snow statues, snow carvings. I mean, they build houses you can walk in that are solid snow. Really intricate, detailed stuff like fire, you know, made out of snow. It's full life-size stuff. Well, one year, I remember, they built the full-size replica of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and you could walk on it and walk through it. That was pretty cool. Yeah, I was only about, I would say, five to eight years after it happened, so it was pretty fresh in people's mind. But, now you'd say, no, well, about a month from now, you typically get a blast of cold stuff. Was that the same time? Because remember back in, what was it, 2005? Four? Three? Might have been a while back for you, but anyhow, when the ice storm came through there, hammered everything around there, and put a branch down all over your Gramps' place there, and right through his roof and right through the ceiling, and I helped him fix that and patch the ceiling. Now, is that about the same time? Because see, pretty much a month prior to that, they had a massive ice storm up here, too, which caused a lot of havoc and killed power. It was the same year as a little bit before. I don't remember what time of the year it was, but I do remember being down there for that.
2004, which means you probably got it in November 2004 if you had it a month previous. Pretty interesting. Yeah, it hit a substantial part of the upstate in some areas. An inch and a half, or sometimes more, ice accumulation. And that's way too much for trees or power lines to withstand. It'll bring down a majority of whatever is standing vertical when it comes through an area like that. I'm thinking that there was amounts up to about 2 inches in isolated areas.
Yeah, I remember that day. We were driving around, me and my brother. We drove up into, kind of getting up in the, you know, past Highway 11, up in the mountain roads area. And we didn't see that much. We were like, well, this isn't too bad. We were expecting a lot more being up there a little bit, but we didn't see that much. We came back down to where he was living there, right on Lake Cunningham Road. And yeah, that thing was just getting hammered, you know. trees are snapping all over the place. And there ended up being so many trees down along that road. You can see there's one straight little straight stretch. It's pretty curvy otherwise. You couldn't see down that straight stretch. There were so many trees. And it was that way 3 or 4 days for the neighbors and people living on the road. They had to go all the way around. Got tired of going all the way around. They just went and started cutting the trees out just to make a path through. I talked to a guy later on. And a guy from the power company, he's like, oh, yeah, we had trees down here. I was like, where was the worst spot that that you had power outages and tree falling over and whatnot? He's like, wait, Cunningham Road. I was like, oh, okay, well. So I guess I seen the worst of it.
I actually lived in Simpsonville at the time, and I think we had at least 1.5 inches. Our power was out for like 5 or 7 days. It was brutal down there. In downtown Greenville, they didn't get hit quite as hard as what we did down there. But our area, our road is a complete disaster of trees down everywhere. It actually sounded like a war zone at night with all the trees popping like crazy. Sounded like people were just shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting. The noise never stopped. Once it started and stuff started coming down, it wouldn't quit. I remember my dad had said, oh, there's an ice storm coming, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, it's not storming outside because I was expecting thunder and lightning. I was like, it's raining. He's like, well, it's about to be an ice storm. And it had started off above freezing, and it went below freezing pretty quickly. So at first it was just raining, and then the ice started forming. And once it started forming, oh, that was the end. It seemed like it was never going to stop. It was just horrible.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive, that's for sure. I've never seen an ice storm that bad. Well, maybe I have up here, but, you know, we don't got trees next to the road, so, you know, I've seen a lot of ice on stuff around here, but we don't got so many trees, and so it isn't going to damage. If a tree falls over out in the field, who cares, you know? And, yeah, it's not really that damaging. I think the trees around here, well, I know, I'm just going to say this, I know the trees around here are a lot stronger than the trees down there. Because they stand out in the wind and, you know, more often they're exposed to the strong winds we have, so they develop, they just get stronger. Whereas up there, they're just bunched close together and they all kind of, being that way, they can kind of protect themselves, you know. Even if they're weak, they grow like crazy, streaking for the sunlight, so they're just straight up sticks and a little bushtail at the top, you know. Good logging would take care of that if you'd weed them out. But anyhow. Yeah, that was the worst ice storm I've seen, at least the worst effects of ice storm. It was impressive, no doubt. I remember what Gramps' place there, he had like, I think he was out of power for 9 days. Well, it took the service box right off the house, so. I remember going over there. I think you probably do too. And him and your Grams there sitting in the bourbon because the house was so cold, you know. And staying warm. He looked like he was getting kind of weathered out there dealing with that cold. And finally your dad's just like, that's enough of that. Rolling in the generators. Which I think he'd be like, oh no, we're okay. Finally your dad's like, yeah, we're going to get you generators and get some light and heat in this house anyhow. So I think as soon as your dad pulled the cord on and started the generator and the lights popped off in the house, your grams is out of the bourbon like, choom, ha, see ya. You hang out in the bourbon, I'm going in the house.
It's easier to warm up a vehicle. In the suburban, you can just hop in it, turn the heat on, and you know, 5 minutes later, it's warm. The house, you got to go out outside and try to set up the generator. Oh, crap, the power box is off the side of the house, so we got to fix that first. Spend time working on that, you know. Hook all that up. Okay, finally you can start the generator up. And then you can start worrying about how to make the house warm. So there's a lot more to it than just turn the key, set it over to warm, turn the blow on, and you know, good to go. But that's the biggest difference there. And I tell you what, that was a insane, really crazy ice storm. I've never seen anything like it since then, and I hope it never comes back. I mean, I wouldn't mind dealing with some snow. I'd rather deal with, you know, 2 feet of snow than 2 inches of ice, for sure. And I just hope that the ice storms stay gone. I don't like that, how they come in like that and just mess everything up. The trees, you got a good point there. They're just so tall, too, so... first off, they kind of support each other. When the wind comes through, they break the wind up for the tree next to them so it doesn't hit as hard and everything. So the tree can be weaker. Not much really hits them because, I mean, a good thunderstorm for us is 60-70 mile an hour winds. We see that come through, or we actually get the wind for the warning. We see that come through maybe twice a year, 3 times a year. Ooh, that was a bad storm. And you go outside and there's some tree limbs down and some leaves on the ground and you go on with life. But up where you're at, you get those derecho lines like to come through with winds of 110, 120, 130 miles an hour on occasion, once or twice a year. Y'all's storms are twice the wind speed, which is 4 times the force. And so you get those storms ripping through there, and it's entirely a different story for you than for us, because you got those standalone trees, which is, you know, the trees are stronger, but you don't have anything to slow the winds down either like we do. So, completely different weather situation.
Yeah, exactly. KB0, KBJ. I remember the trailer house on 101. But next to where I lived, I went back after I moved up here. I went back and I seen they had logged out a whole section next to where I lived. A big area of the trees. And what was left was just trashed by the wind because it could get at it, you know. Broken all up. Because it was now all open. But yeah, up here we get winds from every direction at good speeds. So it strengthens them up, I guess. And plus we don't get that, you know. Our trees don't have as much of a growing season. I mean, you got pretty much twice as long growing season up there as we do. So they take their time and get strong. Or if you go in the mountains, here's another good example. You go in the mountains. I remember out west, you go see some little tree that's hanging on the edge of a cliff, exposed, and the winds are there are strong, and there's always whipping. That tree will have gnarled up branches and everything, and just be one gnarly thing, but it isn't broken, you know, because it's tough, but it ain't good looking. It's always dealing with the wind. You know, talk about trees and they're growing. I planted a tree, a little pine tree. I think it was probably a foot tall. 7 years ago when I moved into this place. That thing is now about 2 feet tall. Yeah, I'm never going to see that thing in my life. If I stay here the rest of my life, I'll never see that thing ever get to the point where I remember your gramps. Once again, he had to cut down a big tree, kind of like, and that's right, because it was getting so big. And I asked him, he said he planted that when he had moved there, and I'm like, wow, he would grow quick down. So I never get to that size. It wouldn't anyhow. But trees across the street, my neighbor has, you know, like 40 feet tall. I don't know. This thing's probably been there over 100 years, you know.
KJ4WZM. I mean, if I planted a pine tree here that was a foot tall, I hate to think about what it would be in 7 years. It probably wouldn't be any shorter than 40 feet, and it might be taller than 60 feet. And now they grow to just over 100 feet tall here. But you got a good many of them that's taller than 100 feet around here. And they take some time to get there. They'll last a little bit, but I tell you what, they really take off growing. they reach some serious height in a very short amount of time, because if they don't, they just won't live, too. So, they just really take off. They just keep going and going and going. Plus, the amount of rainfall we get, it's not unusual to see 70, 75 inches of rain here in a year. And you probably are lucky to see 30, if that. If anywhere near that, you might see 24 inches or less even. I'm not sure. You don't live in a wet climate by any means. It's pretty much dry and windy most of the time. Your wind is always blowing.
Yeah, you're right. Well, average is 20. Or no, 40 inches of precip a year. That includes snow too, though, you remember. Which often doesn't really count, because it doesn't benefit the plants. By the time the plants can use it, it's gone. It's melted and ran off and down the creek, so it doesn't count, you know. And then the ground thaws out finally. So after that, it can start working its way into the ground. But yeah, I'm standing by this tree now. This thing is about where my pocket on my jeans is. So, yeah, it probably was about knee high when I put it in. So I can still pat it on the head.
It's still really cute. That's pretty funny. Pat it on the head. Good little tree. Keep growing. Right, it's going to take it a long time to reach 40 feet tall at that rate. Good grief. I mean, if I planted a knee-high pine tree, it'll be, even this time of year, it'll be pocket-high about 2 weeks from now. Huh. Wow. Not 7 years from now, 2 weeks from now. In the fall, headed towards winter, it will still grow.
Now you get rain and the ground doesn't freeze, you know. This thing's had to deal with freezing ground every 7 years. So, but our pine tree, our maple tree in our yard is growing some in that time. We still have. I didn't plant it, but that thing has taken off. I used to string my antennas from my house to my garage. Now the branches are in the way. That thing has really grown quite a bit. The base of it probably was about 6 inches around. 6 inches in diameter, I should say. I'm looking out the window now. I went back in the house. Looking out the window now, it's probably a good 14 inches in diameter, so I guess that thing's got to the point where it could maybe get below the frost and, I don't know, suck up moisture. And the top, I know, has probably stretched up about 10 foot more. And it's gotten bigger around. So that one's doing well. My apple tree is doing well, too. I had to prune that thing back. That thing was giving me too many apples. Don't need 600 pounds of apples every year, you know, or every other year. In fact, I have two apple trees, and I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 trees on my property. And I live on a lot in town. But there's one in the corner, a big, tall, snaggly old elm or ash or something. That's the oldest one. It's getting near the end of its life, and the branches at the top are really the only ones that seem to amount to anything. But the apple trees and the maple trees are pretty good size. I got two apple trees, and they would put out gobs of apples every other year. And then they'd take a year off. And then they'd pump out more apples. I took that one tree, and I probably had harvested about a third of the apples off that tree. We had used apples. We had done everything we cared with apples, and I was getting tired of, okay, so a friend of mine says he's going to juice some apples. He collected apples from elsewhere. So I said, I'll bring my apples over. So he shook the tree and loaded up my Jimmy. The whole back of it went across the weigh station. I remember it was only about two-thirds of the apples that I harvested. Went across a weigh station, grain elevator weigh station, on the way to his place, and juiced the apples. We had about, probably got 10 gallons of apple juice we kept for ourselves. I know we made 82 gallons of apple juice that evening, afternoon and evening. Half of it was mine. I only took about 10 gallons worth. Let everybody else who helped, have some juice too. And I came back, and I know how much a gallon of juice weighs, so that's 8 pounds or 6 pounds or whatever it is. Basically water. So I came back, weighed the truck again, took off the amount of weight that the juice would have weighed. It was 545 pounds of apples I had hauled over there.
Crazy. I guess those apple trees sucked up every drop of rainwater and turned it into apples, it sounds like. Good grief. How many trees was that, KJ4WZM? How many trees was that? That was one tree or two trees? That's a lot of apples.
That was two-thirds, roughly, I'm estimating. Two-thirds of one tree. The other tree was not quite that much, but it wasn't far behind. We made use of most of the apples on the other tree, which are golden delicious type apples. Then we got a golden delicious apple tree, and then some kind of red apple. I'm not sure what it is, but it's awfully good. I mean, this year we had apples coming off the red apple tree. I've been seeing apples laying around here all over the house. Kids just run out in the yard and grab an apple and chomp on it. One bite and chuck it over their shoulder. You walk on the yard, there's apples all over the yard. This is after harvesting it. And we juiced them too this year. I don't know, it wasn't quite as good a year this year because we had a drought and the apples were a little small. And then it started raining more normally in September. And so they kind of filled out a little bit. So sometimes in October, beginning of October, we shook that tree and, maybe it was about middle of October, shook that tree and harvested those apples. And like I said, we didn't get them all. We had done some already, but once again, we got like 8 gallons off that tree or something. Not as near as much as time before because of our drought, but yeah, you got so many apples like that, it's like one little blemish on it, chuck it in the garden, it's kind of funny because when we went down there just now, stopped at a roadside stand down near, somewhat near the coast, my wife's like, I want some apples. I'm like, okay. So we bought her a bag of apples or whatever, container of apples, 10 apples, $5. I'm like, man, we just got a whole tree full of apples up in South Dakota. We're kicking them and throwing them and using them for anything we want and stepping on them. And, they're rolling all over the place. I'm chucking them at squirrels and everything. And here we are paying $5 for 10 apples,
That's pretty funny right there. That's real funny. Oh, wow. Yeah, I can understand the frustration about that, too. We've had gardens before. We had tomatoes and other different veggies and good grief. Every once in a while, they just come out your ears. Strawberries, like, oh my goodness, we gotta go pick strawberries again. And it's like gallons and gallons and gallons and gallons of them everywhere already. And just every once in a while, something happens with the fruit crop, and it's like 10 times what you would normally imagine they produce is what's on there. I remember one year we had blackberries like that. I have no idea how many blackberries we got, but it was stupid amounts. We must have made, I don't know, 10, probably 30 more gallons of jam. Not jars, gallons, a quart at a time. At least, I'd hate to exaggerate. I think it was at least 30 or maybe 40 gallons of jam is what we made one year. I mean, all we did was buy sugar and buy pectin and just make jam. More and more and more and more and more. And we didn't use nearly all the blackberries that was out there. We didn't even make a dent in them. It was so much. One year it was ridiculous. And I remember when we had the flowers, it looked like it had just snowed on the bushes. Good grief. But every once in a while, a crop will just do that and just mass produce like that. And it just makes me wonder what in the world to do with all kinds of stuff like that when there's just so much of it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And yeah, you're having blackberry fights and, you know, yeah, one drops on the ground, you're like, who cares, you know, and a whole handful could drop on the ground, it don't matter. Yeah, it's pretty impressive how it can work out that way sometime. But then, you know, like next year here we'll be sitting, well, maybe, I'm hoping it will be changed, because I like apples, everyone, who doesn't, you know. But, like I said, we had two trees, and they were both producing a lot of apples at the same time every year, and then they take a break. It's like they shell themselves out, and they got to take a rest for a year, you know. So I was like, well, this one tree has just got too many apples on it anyhow. And I don't need two trees doing that. So that red apple tree, and I took and I went up there with a saw, and I just cut and cut and cut a huge heap of branches off. I said, enough apples. And this was at the end of this year. And I just whittled that tree, man, down. And so I hope I got it into another year's cycle. You know, so one tree or the other will be producing every year. Because the red apple tree kicked in this year and just pumped out the apples. But the golden delicious tree didn't do, hardly any. I mean, it had some, but there weren't many. So I'm hoping next year the golden delicious will be the one with a lot of apples there, and the red one will be taking a break. So we'll get apples every year, hopefully now, instead of this cycle where you're getting 1,000 pounds of apples, you know, every other year. I don't need that. KB0, KBJ.
So easy. My dad never got fruit trees like that, apples especially, because of concerns of yellow jackets. A number of family members are allergic to bee stings, what have you, so just never really got fruit trees because of that, especially apple trees, just because of the yellow jacket problem. I don't know if you have them down, up there like we do down here, but they can be particularly bad, and if they find a food source and they want to make a nest really close to it to make it much easier for them because they don't have to go as far, and the nests tend to show up towards the tail end of summer. Don't really see them at the beginning of spring. I don't know why that is. Don't really see a lot of the yellow jacket nests around March, April, May, June at all. You might find one in July, but August, September, oh my goodness. They're kind of hard to miss at that point. They're huge. Just bees go in and out constantly, especially towards the tail end of September into the beginning of October. There's just so many of them, it's crazy. Big nests. And unfortunately, that's around the time apples come out, too. So if they decide to make a nest near the apple tree, you got yellow jackets everywhere and rotten apples. And they kind of get excited over that and too much risk of getting stung. So between all that, that would be why.
Yeah, I can imagine. I totally understand that, because we do have that problem here, too. I haven't seen no nest themselves, but I've seen, you know, I've seen in the fall this year some yellow jackets and, you know, working away on the apples. But not much this year. But you got a lot warmer fall than us, so it would be a problem every year for you. But I think it was about 3 years ago or so. We had a real warm fall, and boy, did we have we had a problem. I mean, one of the kids did get stung, but yeah, we had a problem. We had to be on top of those apples, you know. Don't worry about them up in the trees. Because that's, bees are up there, the yellow jackets are up there, and the kids aren't near them. But, yeah, pretty much every day we were out there in the yard. My wife would be, or I would be, and taking care of the apples, picking them up, getting rid of them, you know. And I just throw them right down the garbage disposal. Just 5-gallon buckets worth, you know. Keep that garbage disposal humming until the thing overheats and the circuit breaker kicks off on it. You know, you wait a little bit and push the red button and away you go again. But I found I could get about 5 gallons worth of apples down a garbage disposal before that happens. So yeah, we were having to keep on top of it that year, but generally it gets cool enough to where they're not out. Cool or wet, either one of them, both of them discourage that from happening, but so not too much of a problem, but once in a while, we do. But down there, yeah, you would have a problem every year, probably.
Apple down, garbage disposal. What did you have, a septic or a sewer system? How are you? I would assume you probably don't have a public sewer system, so I bet you put all those apples down the septic tank. Good grief, that was a lot. 5 gallons at a time. Wow. I can see that now. All those apples going down the drain. That's hilarious. I gotta stop laughing about that. Now I don't know how I can.
Yeah, we got a, living in town, we got a public sewer system, so it goes out to the lagoon after it goes through some treatment plant, perhaps. I don't know where that is in town here. Maybe it is. Maybe it just goes straight to lagoon. We got 2 lagoon pits east of town here. So that's where it goes. But yeah, down they go. You can jam a lot of apples. You just take that little rubber thing that's in your disposal there. You can pull it up. You know, a lot of people don't know that. But you can pull that thing up, and you can fit the big apples down there. So you just jam them down there with a stick or something, and if they're too big. But most of them aren't. But some of them get a little tight, but you just jam them in. And then you follow that up with the trout, or not the trout, the fish, you know. You take fish and clean them and flay them, eat what, you know, take off what you want to eat, and then down the fish go too. So it's a handy tool. Big fish. I got a 32-inch fish. You know where he went? Down the drain.
Pick stuff down your sink, huh? Put it in the sink. We'll get rid of it. That's pretty funny. I would have never, ever thought about putting apples down the sink before. It just sounds so funny to me. The more I thought about it, the funnier it got. When I keyed up the radio, I had no idea. I'd end up laughing about it so much. But I've never thought about putting apples down the sink before, so I just found that kind of funny. Because I would have never thought about doing that. I don't know why. I just, let's put apples down the sink. Because why not? That garbage disposal is awful hungry. It wants an applesauce. What's his name, Gerber? Oh, man. That's pretty good right there. Our fall is usually much warmer than yours is, so that's probably a large part of why we have the yellow jacket problem like we do. And I've been stung by them before. It's not necessarily the nicest feeling in the world, not at all. There's much more pleasant experiences out there than being stung by a yellow jacket. And from that aspect, I don't mind not having gotten stung by them. Because of fruit trees, and they're just kind of hard to avoid because they're just so much into everything. They'll be crawling all over the ground, not even flying around. You don't even know they're there because they're so busy gorging themselves that, you know, they're completely out of sight. You go pick something up, next thing you know, you just got yourself lit up. There's no mistaking it when it happens either. So, yeah, I'm not necessarily a fan of yellow jacket stings at all.
No, I'm right. I'm not into that either. No, you gotta watch them. Pick them up with gloves, or just go around and blast them with some WD-40 and light them all on fire or something, you know. Yeah, I've thought of, you know, using a disposal. I haven't done it yet though. I mean, I thought of using a disposal for it. I mean, getting a new one, you know. I got access to that, and using a disposal as a grinder, you know, when making apple juice. The only reason I haven't done it is, I guess, that's half the problem is grinding the stuff up before you squish it or press it or spin it or however you get the juice separated from the pulp. Actually, I did a pretty good job, I think, last year. But, I thought I was using a disposal for grinding up. But I think you need more water. You know, it would just plug up otherwise. When you run a disposal, you typically run in water to keep it moving. So I haven't tried that. But I did a few years ago, 2 years ago, I think it was, we had apples. And I used a 5-gallon pail and a sheetrock mud mixing paddle mounted to one of my whole hog, one of my whole hogs, and I had a big heavy-duty chunk of wood. I drilled a hole in and put the shaft of the paddle through there and stood on that board on top of the bucket, and you know, bucket full of apples, and then just pull the trigger. And, hang on, that thing will twist you and throw you off the bucket. But that made pretty good work of a 5-gallon bucket of apples. It mashed it up real quick. So that's how we mashed, got them down to processing size that time.
Exactly what you're talking about, that tool there, I've used it before a lot of times. It did tile work, and that's how I mixed up the mortar for it, was with that tool there. And I tell you what, that tool will yank your shoulder straight out of your socket in a heartbeat if you aren't paying attention to what's going on. You can't even you can't get distracted with that at all, or it'll put a hurting on you so quick. It'll teach you a valuable lesson in a heartbeat, that's for sure. One you won't forget for a long time. Can't tell you how many times it felt like I was about to wring my wrist off or pop my shoulder out or something. It uncaught something, hit area where it was too thick or whatever, and real quick. It's a pretty unforgiving tool as far as that goes.
Yeah, I got all our tools are battery operated, you know, but for the most part, except for the air compressor and one big 2-inch PEX expander, but otherwise they're battery operated. No, they got some torque to them. Even the small hand drills, you got to hang on them babies. You're running a paddle bit, you know, a spade bit, putting a 1-inch hole through something, and you catch a nail, and that thing will, even a hand drill will take it, and if you're not hanging on, it will twist and smack your, you know, if you got some other body part between it and the wall or something, it'll whack it good, you know. So, yeah, I like to stay out of the way of that thing and let it hit the wall, not me. Just put it against the wall. Use the wall for holding it, you know. Or if I have to be in the way, I'm not just going to use my hand. I'll put my hip into it and not hold it off my hip, but put it right against my hip. So it's not got no speed up when it does catch, you know, and it's just going to try to shove me over instead of smack me and then shove me over. They got some serious torque for sure. You get into, like I said, a nail or something, the bit gets cocked in the hole and all of a sudden binds up and it stops and the drill don't. You know what I mean. KB0, KBJ.
The one that I was always using when I was doing tile work was 120 volts plug into the wall, and it didn't say, oops, I'm sorry. He was pretty unforgiving. That's a good idea, though, putting it up against an object that's not going to move either, because at least it takes it off you. I didn't really get to do that because you had to move the thing around so much in order to try to mix all the mortar up. So it would go from basically water to being really thick to just hitting loose powder again, and just constant change of texture as you want to stir it up, especially just a little bit into the process, because it wasn't all mixed right yet. So just all of a sudden just throw you and stuff. So I didn't like that very much. I love tile work, and I liked the finished product of mixing it up, but when it just suddenly yanks on you, no thanks. I didn't appreciate being thrown around a whole lot. It hurts.
Yeah, you operate them enough, you know what angles to, and what to do and what not to do. Mostly through experience. Don't stand in the way, or if you have to be in the way, you got a good grip and all that good stuff. So what are you doing for keep yourself occupied and employed now?
Truck around. That's about all that I do now. I work for a company called McConnell Grading, and I run usually a flatbed 18-wheeler. Hauling all kinds of different stuff. One of the more common things I do, I haul pieces of concrete, storm drains and stuff. I take those all over the area. I make 1 to 2 runs a day, and I drive several hundred miles a day usually. Every once in a while I'll get lucky and something will go to Greenville or Anderson or Easley, but usually it's a good distance away, a couple hundred miles or so. Some of the more major interstate projects near here, Interstate 85 project, Interstate 26 down by Columbia, things like that, massive highway projects. I've done a lot of stuff for them, so in and out of construction zones an awful lot, which can be interesting, especially in higher traffic volume times. Big headache. But that's what I've been doing. Also done some stuff like heavy haul for them, running dump trucks. I've been in a dump truck for a couple days now. And also dump trailer and all kinds of different things. One time while I was in a heavy haul, I had a bulldozer on a low boy trailer, and the bulldozer blade was significantly wider than the trailer, so it stuck out into traffic a good bit. They had to be careful not to hit bridges and oncoming cars and things like that. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that sounds like a good job. I like that idea too. You'd like it up here, I think. A lot of room for equipment and trucks and such. Wide roads. It'd be pretty easy stuff. Straight roads, you know. But you gotta deal with slippery roads too. Good thing they are straight. You know. Heading to work this morning. Like I said, it was glare ice and didn't get over 35 on the 65 mile an hour road. Then I hit the interstate, which you can do 80 on. Well, I went 45 and I didn't get past. There was a car behind me and there was a car ahead of me, and I didn't gain on the car ahead of me and the guy behind me 2 miles back. Well, I think he was about a half a mile back. He made up a mile and a half in 14 miles, so he wasn't doing much more than me. I was doing 45. But yeah, we were going, well, sideways. The wind was coming out of the north, northwest, and I was going west. So it was a pretty good side wind going the 10 miles out to the interstate. It's just straight from my town, just straight shot west 10 miles. To the interstate. Up and down hills, but still straight. No curves, no stop signs, nothing. And so it was pretty good. I did see the anti-slip function light kick on a time or two as my back tires, you know, when a wind gust would hit, would kind of slide the vehicle sideways. So that's why I was doing 35. But then as I headed up the interstate, that was a little better. The interstate's angled northwest, so I was heading directly into the wind more or less, so that was better. Had a headwind, but at least it wasn't pushing me sideways, so it wasn't too bad. So that's what I have to deal with today. Yeah, my van is kind of it's a box van. You can stand up inside the box, you know, part, but it's all fiberglass and it's not heavy. Single wheel. And yeah, it was it's a light van. I've seen it even on dry roads. I've seen the anti-locks kick in on a windy day, rounding a corner or something. Now, we're not talking a fast, sweeping corner. All our corners, probably 99% of our corners are 90-degree corners, you know, intersection-type corners. So you just round the corner, you know, your usual, 15 mile an hour, and the wind hits, and all of a sudden tires off the ground, and you know it because all of a sudden the anti-lock or an anti-slip lights are flashing at you, and you feel the vehicle slowing down. There was one time I pulled out, this was this summer, pulled out on a gravel road. There was a stiff west wind. I was heading north 1 mile to the tar, and I was on gravel with that strong wind. The back tires were slipping the whole time, and the vehicle was telling me about it because it wouldn't go. It was backing off the throttle, and you know, and it was like, hey, the tire's leaving the ground back here, slow down. So he'd slow to, you know, but I had to pedal to the floor, and the thing was just like, I'm doing like 25, you know, like, come on, just get up to the tar. So I can then turn and head with the wind. But yeah, it was kind of weird to have that happen.